as a gift to all the marhumin and marhumat. Let's recite Surah Al-Fatiha, please. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. لا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم. والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين وخاتم النبيين وسيد المرسلين أبي القاسم محمد. وعلى آل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المظلومين. ولعن الله الدائم على أعدائهم أجمعين من يومنا هذا إلى قيام يوم الدين. السلام على الحسين وعلى علي بن الحسين وعلى أولاد الحسين وعلى أصحاب الحسين. Respected scholars and elders and brothers and sisters. عظم الله أجورنا وأجوركم بمصابنا بالحسين عليه السلام. I begin by first of all sending my salam and my condolences to our beloved master and leader, the awaited Imam of our time, أجلله فرجه الشريف. صلوا على محمد وعلى محمد. And all the respected believers, I send my condolences on the arrival of the month of Muharram, of course, depending on the moon sighting. In Hadith, brothers and sisters, we're told that for our leaders, the arrival of this month, the sighting of the moon, was a transformational experience. Maybe there was a time in the past where this needed no explanation. For everyone, it was clear that when this new year comes about, unlike what most other cultures do in terms of a new year and celebration, for the followers of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam, it is a time of transformation. But in these days, it's very important for us to remind ourselves about what we are doing and why we're doing it, in order to be able to continue this tradition and to deepen and to further it. So our masters, the Ahlul Bayt alayhim wasalam, they would take this time very seriously. In one narration that's mentioned in our books of hadith, we're told that our eighth Imam alayhi salam says, that the month of Muharram, even in the pre-Islamic era, was a time when the shedding of blood was prohibited. But it was the month in which they shed our blood. It was the month in which they violated our sanctity. It was the month in which they took our women and our children as prisoners. And then he says something very beautiful. He says, فَعَلَى مِثْلِ الْحُسَيْنِ فَلْيَبْكِ الْبَاكُونَ, which in a poetic way would say that if there's anyone who wishes to shed a tear, then let them shed a tear for the likes of Hussein alayhi salam. Then he describes the benefit of doing so. He says that somebody who is able to shed tears for Imam Hussein alayhi salam, it is an atonement for great sins. That is just one of the benefits of shedding the tear. And then he describes how his father, the seventh Imam alayhi salam, would be during this time. He says that my father would not be seen in the state of being joyful and jovial during this time. And as the days would progress, his grief would increase until it reached its climax on the 10th day of the month, in which it would be the day of his musiba and his huzn, his tragedy and his grief would be felt on that day in particular. And then he would say that, هُوَ الْيَوْمُ الَّذِي قُتِلَ فِيهِ الْحُسَيْنِ. This is a day in which Hussein alayhi salam was killed. So when we gather together for these commemorations, they have incredible value. They are completely taking the seerah, the way of life of the great ones, and putting into practice at our times. What are we trying to get out of these? What is the purpose of them? I want to share with you some points of guidance from our great scholars, just briefly before I launch into the introducing the topic for our 10, 11 nights, inshallah. I just want to mention a few points from our great scholars where they describe to us some of the outcomes that we would like to have and some things that we would want to stay away from during this time. Inshallah, you can help me with the salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. The first purpose, brothers and sisters, that we're here for is to become acquainted with or to deepen our understanding of the teachings of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. We're here to learn. We're here to be reminded. This Imam of ours, this Shaheed, was able to demonstrate so much in his actions, and every one of them is worth studying from many different angles. And every year, you must have noticed that as you come to the majalis and you think about what took place and you learn from the different opportunities that are presented, your understanding, your ma'rifah, it deepens. This is one of the very important goals that we would like to achieve. Our understanding of Imam Hussein alayhi salam right now, compared to what is going to be, inshallah, after the day of Ashura, we should have increased. And for that purpose, we typically in our communities, we will have different type of speakers who come and share different points. That is the reason why I'm here, inshallah, to be at your service during this time. I'm very grateful to Allah Ta'ala for this opportunity and grateful to the community for giving me this opportunity. My humble request is that when I'm here, please see what you can do to, inshallah, reach out and, you know, greet and maybe make a connection. You know, there's limited time that we have with each other, especially to our young ones. Don't be scared. I always like to say this, that sometimes we have a mistaken understanding of people who dress up with this uniform, which is a sacred uniform. Sometimes there's a mistaken understanding that they are like a museum relic. What do you do with a museum relic? Is that you go and you see it, you stay away from it a little bit distance, like everyone is sitting right now, and then you go away. You never come close, you never interact, you never spend time too much. Otherwise, alarm bells are going to ring. I can assure you there's no alarm bells going to ring if you come up, and inshallah we can meet, we can greet, and we can make those connections. And sometimes these one-to-one connections can be much more effective than whatever can be conveyed from the formal opportunities that are there. The second goal and objective, brothers and sisters, is that once we have reacquainted and deepened our understanding of the teachings of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, we need to be looking to see how can we be leading Husseini lives. This is one of the outcomes that we are trying to achieve. Some type of practical change that is taking place. Because knowledge is truly beneficial when it is acted upon. You've heard the story of the beggar who was so hungry that he was crying out of his hunger. And the rich man comes along And he says to him, what is it that's making you cry? He says, I'm so hungry. So the rich man had just bought a whole loaf of bread. He sits down next to the poor man and he says that you're crying, I'm going to cry with you as well. So the two of them have a good cry. And then the rich man gets up and he says, I had a good cry with you, goodbye. And the poor man says, well, thank you. But I was hoping for some of the bread because really I'm crying because of hunger and the bread that you have would help me. The rich man says that I can give you my tears, but I can't give you my bread. That's for me, the tears are for you. That's not the way we want to be. Inshallah, we are here to offer our tears. We are here to offer our sacrifice. We're here to offer our sweat and our blood in terms of the amount of efforts that take place in running programs like this. The brothers and sisters who are involved with these, may Allah reward them for their tireless efforts. But we want more than that as well. How can we lead the Husseini lifestyle? And the third goal that our great scholars encourage us to think about is this, that how can we think about the larger goals of Islam and how to achieve those? Preparation for the Imam of our time, the revival and the reformation of Islam, introducing Islam to those who are hungry for guidance and they don't know about this beautiful teachings. This is one of the third goal that we would say we want to, inshallah, achieve from our gatherings. Now, at the same time, our respected scholars, may Allah preserve them, they also say that we should be careful about a couple of things. What are those things? One of them, they say that when it comes to these gatherings, we should avoid doing what's called ifrat and tafrit, meaning avoid going to the extremes. What does it mean to go to the extreme? It's not that, of course, we know that there's no limit when it comes to the love of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. There's no limit when it comes to my passion for being a Husseini. But when it comes to my practice, I have to realize that Allah Ta'ala has given me responsibilities. And I want to make sure that my commemoration for Imam Hussein alayhi salam does not prevent me from performing my other responsibilities. During these days and nights, I still want to make sure that I have time with my family, at least at the level of discussing and sharing and exchanging experiences. Sometimes we hear from complaints from the families. They say that for 40 days, or maybe 60 days, or 68 days, or whatnot, you know, we basically say khudafis to one another. Because every day the ladies will be going one place and the men will be going to another place. Now, alhamdulillah, mashallah, like I love that spirit. But let's try to look at it from a balanced perspective. What will be the long-term implications on my family? In these key times of development, we want to make sure that our bonds are very strong and that communication is also taking place. At the very least, we're afterwards, sometime in the day, we're exchanging notes, we're talking about like, okay, so those words, for example, that were said in the beautiful Marthia or the Noha that recited, did they mean something to you? Or, for example, you know, that point about that story about the beggar and the rich man, what did you take from it? And what so on and so forth. That's number one, is avoiding extremes. And of course, the other extreme would be to say that these days are just like any other day. And, you know, if we make it and we get a chance, then we'll turn it on the live stream and we'll see what we can do in terms of tuning in. But otherwise, my life will be just like normal. As we saw, the Ahlul Bayt and Muslims' lives would change during this time. Number two, second thing we want to avoid, inshallah, is that we would like to avoid any acts that would lead to flaming the fuel of discord and disunity. This is something that Amaraja have guided us towards. And whether we are in the spiritual homelands, or whether we are in the lands of Ghurba, where we are, for example, here, the same principle applies. We need to do things tactfully, things that will allow us to be a source of adornment for the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam, not people who will take people away from the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam and be a source of shame for them. This is number two. And number three, we want to make sure that we do things that will strengthen the position of the religion. One of the things I always encourage my respected brothers and sisters, those who organize the programs, may Allah reward them for their efforts. I say that, brothers and sisters, let's put on those programs just like this, very well organized, beautifully decorated, programs that will be something that we would, it would be a source of pride for us to bring somebody here who doesn't know anything about it. They would be honored to be here. They would find it attractive. Not in some places, we find that instead, for example, let's say there's somebody who's interested in Islam, we make sure that we don't bring them in these first 10 days. Because it's just something which we can't explain to them. And it's something which we'd rather them not be there for whatever reasons. Right? We have to be thinking about this. We have a responsibility when it comes to this message of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. It is not something which is solely my possession or your possession or the community's possession. Imam Hussein's message was a universal message. We want to make sure, inshallah, we don't do anything to hamper the spread of this universal message. So inshallah, these were 3 points of advice about what we want to take from these gatherings, and 3 things that we want to, inshallah, stay away from during these gatherings. And that now allows me to spend some moments and some minutes introducing the topic for these nights. Inshallah, you can help me with the salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. The title of the series is Karbala, the Enlightened Journey. Now that is a generic title, but inshallah you'll see in the course of the nights, those of you who will be with us, that these words were chosen with precision, meaning that there's something we're going to describe about Karbala and enlightenment. Now, in order to introduce the topic, I want to take us to the years leading up to the tragedy of Ashura. And we want to evaluate what's happening in the Muslim Ummah at that time. From some perspectives, if we were to look at history, things were actually going pretty well from some criteria. You know, when you want to evaluate something, what's really important is you have to see what criteria are you using to evaluate. Because depending on that, your results are going to differ. So from some criteria, things were going pretty well. For example, if you were to take a poll and statistics and you say the number of those who had memorized the Quran in the Muslim Ummah from the time of our Prophet to the time of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, you'd see that the graph is increasing. People were memorizing the Quran. People were gaining more familiarity with the teachings of the Quran, at least on an outer level. There were people who were living beyond the Prophet's time, meaning that they lived past the Prophet, people who were the writers of the wahi of the Quran, meaning that they could tell stories about how different ayat were revealed at different times. There was people who were living at that time who could tell the stories of what happened in Badr and Uhud and Khandaq and all these Ahzab, all these great battles. They could tell these stories. You could go and meet these living legends. People like Ammar, people like Salman, at least for some time, they were alive. From some perspective, things were going well. The mosques might have been full at that time. The Quran was being read. There were even people who were there who, let's say people didn't understand the position of the Ahlul Bayt being the divine representatives, at least they could go and say that these are the family of the Prophet. And they could go and they could see them, they could interact with them. Right? Things were, from some perspectives, they were looking pretty good. But you and I know that at the same time that these apparent manifestations of Islam, maybe they were going in a good direction, at the same time, there was a deep sickness that was growing in the Muslim Ummah at that time. And it's this sickness that I want to kind of dig into. I want to try to see if we can come up, use a word to describe this sickness. But in order to do that, I would like to first take us to the Quran. where Allah Ta'ala, in four verses of the Quran, He mentions a particular term, which inshallah we're going to be using throughout the course of these lectures. What is this term? Let me mention a couple of these ayat. The first one is Surah Al-Ahzab. Allah Ta'ala says, أَعُوذُ بِاللَّهِ مِنَ الشَّيْطَانِ الرَّجِيمِ وَقَرْنَا فِي بُيُوتِكُنَّ وَلَا تَبَرُّجْنَا تَبَرُّجَ الْجَاهِلِيَّةِ الْأُولَى. This command is for the wives of the Prophet, specifically, where Allah Ta'ala tells them that you stay in your homes. Right? This was a special command for the wives of the Prophet. And then he gives a command of another command, which applies to the wives of the Prophet first and foremost, but then also it's a general command, which is what? Do not do tabarruj. Tabarruj comes from the word buruj, like towers. Right? You know how they're very apparent. You can see them from far away. Allah says that don't do things so that you are visible like towers. Now, then He describes those particular activities that would make a lady, a female, visible by saying that that is the type of activity that belongs to al-jahiliyatil ula. Jahiliyah, of course, means the era or the mannerisms of ignorance, the lifestyle of ignorance. So that's ayah number one. Ayah number two, Allah Ta'ala is describing in Surah Ali Imran what happened in the Battle of Uhud. Now you know from Islamic history that Battle of Uhud was a difficult battle for the Muslims. Because at one point, you know, they were in the lead and then things went completely the other way. And they ended up losing a lot of casualties. Even some thought that our Prophet, our beloved Prophet, had been killed. And there was a lot of grief that took place after this battle. So what happened? Allah Ta'ala describes the people at that time. And He says that there was a group of amongst them, قَدْ أَهَمَّتْهُمْ أَنفُسُهُمْ يَظُنُّونَ بِاللَّهِ ظَنَّ الْجَاهِلِيَةِ. There was people who were thinking and they were suspecting and thinking and they were bringing back the beliefs of the era of ignorance, the jahiliyah. Okay, what's the story behind that? It's very interesting. There were some people who had a very black and white understanding of the way this world works. They used to think that, look it, if you just, all you got to do if you want to make it in this world is you got to find the right God to connect to. Right? So let's say, for example, the stone god is your good luck god, then if you go to that stone god, then you're going to find success in everything that you do. You'll win all your battles, you'll get all your trade the way you want it, and you'll even get married on top of that. Everything's going to be good for you, okay? But if it doesn't work, then you go to the wood god, maybe that's going to work for you. So they used to think that depending on how you chose your god, you just connected to the right, you know, sort of deity, then success is guaranteed for you. So they were thinking that, okay, we know that our Prophet is the Prophet. We know Islam is the religion. So then, well, of course we're going to be victorious. Everything we do, we're going to find success in. What was wrong here? The thing that was wrong in their thinking is that now when they started to see that failure, they started to think that, hey, maybe we didn't connect to the right deity. Right? Maybe this whole approach of trusting solely in Allah and letting Him determine the results is not the right approach to take. So Allah reveals a verse and He corrects their thinking. Don't go back to that way of thinking. Now you're supposed to be elevated in your thinking. You have one source, one mudabbir, one entity that manages your affairs, one entity in which you trust, one who is in charge. But you should know that one who is in charge acts according to wisdom and according to a certain system. At times you may see success. At times you might see apparent failure. But as long as you're doing your duty, you are still successful. So Allah corrects their thinking. And there's other ayat as well that I'm not going to mention right now. But what I do want to say is that in the Quran, at times Allah warns people that now that you have Islam, don't go back to jahiliyah. Jahiliyah, the era of ignorance, as you can see from these examples, it can apply to the way we do things, our actions. it can apply to the way that we perceive things, our beliefs. And in other examples, it can be in the way that we construct our ethical system, the way we see our values. All of them can be fall under jahiliyyah. Now, it's very interesting, brothers and sisters. You know, there were people who would read these ayat of the Quran and they would memorize them and they would think about them and reflect upon them, and sometimes they would have a question. So in this case, I'm sure there's a question that came to many of your mind, which was the following, that why is it that Allah describes the jahiliyyah as being al-jahiliyyah al-ula? Why does He describe it as being the first jahiliyyah? What does that mean? So this question was posed of the Ahlul Bayt to the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam. And in riwayat, in ahadith, in narrations, we're told in a few of them, they say that the same way that there was a time of ignorance, there was a period and a lifestyle of ignorance, the same way that there will come again a period of ignorance as well. And in one tradition, we're told that our Prophet says that that second period of ignorance will be worse than the first period of ignorance. So if we go to the time of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, we will... we will see, inshallah, in the course of these evenings, we'll see various, from various aspects. We'll look at it from the perspective of ethics, from family, from lifestyle, from the practice of religion. We'll look at it from their treatment of one another, from community, different angles. We're, inshallah, going to be able to see how it is that even though they had progressed in time, they had gone back when it came to what Islam was supposed to be. But we're not going to stop there, because that wouldn't be doing justice. Because what we want to do is we want to look at the past to understand the present and go to the future. So the last point I'll make tonight, brothers and sisters, is that the same way that there was a jahiliyyah, a period of ignorance that was seeping back into the community after the death of our beloved Prophet, the same way that in our times, we're also dealing with a new era of ignorance. And for this, it's very important that we understand where we are and what shapes the type of thinking in the place that we are. Brothers and sisters, I'm going to just take you on a very brief journey in the history of how religion has been dealt with in the West, because we live here after all. And no matter how much we try, we are affected by the perspective that others have on religion. Religion at one time was considered a way of life. It was considered to be the be-all and of everything. Education was based on religion. Government was based on religion. Power was distributed according to religion. But you know that there was a time period where slowly the society moved away from religion. That is called the Renaissance. And this era was a time of different thinkers looking at the teachings of Christianity at that time, seeing the flaws in it and saying that we need something else. And slowly they began to move away from religion. Religion was there, but religion was put in it boxed into its own place in life. And so we see different thinkers, they don't want to openly say something against religion because people still felt attached to it. But what they started to say is that until now, you were told that you have a purpose in life and your purpose is to worship God. But now you should know that your purpose is no longer to worship God. Your purpose is to be all that you can be. You define your own purpose. God has given you unlimited potential. Go and find what you can be to the maximum. This idea of worship and servitude, it was slowly taken away. And then we fast forward to the next era, the Age of Enlightenment, and we see that now the trend moves even further. Now we have thinkers who say that God is there. God created. But God created in a way where it was such an amazing creation that He created and then He left it to be. So practically speaking, whether God is there or not, it doesn't matter. It's up to you. You go ahead and find your own way. And it progressed from there. We had a time period when now they said that, you know what? There's nothing like any established truths that you're learning from your society or from your parents. You make your own meaning. You construct your own meaning. You do whatever, however you feel, whatever you think is right, you go for it. And it leads up to what's called the postmodern era. And I'm going very fast through these things, but I'm just giving you like the highlights. The postmodern era, which is the one which we live in right now, where they say that, you know what, there is no such thing as meaning anymore. Religion is something which, if you believe that it's true, that's completely up to you. But the one thing we can say is that there is no truth. There's nothing which is absolute. Everyone unto his own. So what is the net result of that over time? Is that religion, which started out as being something which was affecting all part of our lives, it gets smaller and smaller and smaller. And now, when we think of religion, usually it's something which is on the level of like, well, you can be a religious person, or you can be somebody who's into yoga, right? Or you can be somebody who's into Buddhist meditation. Or you can be somebody who, let's say, you know, you don't do that, right? But you do sports instead. Meaning that it's completely a personal lifestyle, a personal choice. Now, when we come to the message of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, we see that Imam Hussein alayhi salam is as if he's crying out to us, right? What is he telling us? He's telling us that, my dear followers, those of you who love me, please understand my message. My message was given back then when I told people that don't let religion be something which is just like how you take something and you taste it on your tongue and then you take it away. Religion is supposed to be something that you embrace, that you take, you understand, you apply when it comes to your life in all aspects, in our family, in our education, in our recreation, in our community, in the way that we look at this world. And inshallah, we hope that with the help of Allah, we'll be able to see and examine some of these teachings, inshallah. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Brothers and sisters, as we now move to the Masaib portion of our program this evening, I just want to mention one story to inshallah inspire us. One of our living maraji, may Allah protect him, he says that I used to attend the dars, the lesson of one of the great scholars in the city of Najaf. And this scholar, sallu ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad, by the name of Sayyid Abdul Hadi al-Shirazi, he says that one time my teacher, Sayyid Shirazi, they brought him the news that his brother-in-law had passed away. So he was obviously saddened by this news. But as he was sitting with us in our class, this marja says, he says that he started to tell us some things about the deceased. Because, you know, sometimes it's the tradition in Hausa that maybe for some reason somebody finds out about some special quality of one of the scholars, but then that scholar tells him, do not share this with anyone while I'm alive, because it will just create trouble. Now that his brother-in-law had passed away, he started to share some of the, you know, the excellences and the merits and the stations that he had reached. So he says something very interesting. He says that one time, this is the teacher of one of the living marja, he says that one time I saw a dream. And in my dream, I was sitting in my room, and I saw that I was visited by two very special, pure figures. And I recognized them to be none other than Imam Hussein alayhi salam and Abu al-Fadl Abbas alayhi salam. And I saw that they were taking note of all those who were the dhakirin of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, those who were somehow responsible for allowing others to shed tears for Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And I saw that Imam Hussein alayhi salam ordered Abu al-Fadl, he says to him, my brother, please add the name of so-and-so. And I recognized it was the name of my brother-in-law. So when I woke up from my dream, and then the next time my brother-in-law visited me, this scholar, he says that I said to him, "What have you done?" Right? And I described to him the dream. And he says, I saw that my brother-in-law was overcome with emotion. And he tells me what happened. He says that, you know, until now, I've never had the tawfiq or the opportunity to do the masayib. I'm a teacher, I'm a scholar, but I've never done this part of, you know, mentioning the story of Imam Hussein. But I was reflecting about the traditions regarding the importance of crying and making other people cry. Man baka aw abka aw tabaka wajabat lahul jannah. Whoever cries or makes somebody else cry or even tries to cry, Allah Ta'ala has promised that person Jannah, paradise. So I thought to myself that, you know what? Let me at least try. So I said, I will get a book, I'll take it home, and just for my own family, I'll start telling the story. I'll read from the book and let's see what happens. So I talked to my friends and I said, do you have a book I can borrow? They didn't have anyone. Finally, one of them said that, okay, here's a book. I took it home for my family. I have two children. For the 10 nights of Muharram, I started to do this. I would open the book and I would just read the story. And I see that just because of this act, this is the reward that has been given to me. Brothers and sisters, this gathering of ours, alhamdulillah, may Allah be thanked. May we feel that gratitude that He has given us this tawfiq to be able to gather for this gathering. Inshallah, we want to try to, if we can cry, or at least bring tears to our eyes as we remember the story. Sallallahu alayka ya Aba Abdullah. Sallallahu alayka ya Ibn Rasulillah. Traditionally, on this first night of Muharram, we remember the departure of the beloved Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam from Madinatul Rasul, from the city of their grandfather. We know that when the message came to Imam Hussein alayhi salam that you have to give bay'ah to Yazid, Imam Hussein alayhi salam was very insistent on following the principles. He exclaimed, "Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un wa 'ala al-Islam as-salam." Let's bid farewell to Islam if this ummah is tried with the leadership of one like Yazid. Someone like me will never give bay'ah to Yazid. He orders his family members, he tells them that this is the time for us to leave. We need to get ready, we're going on a journey. That night in Medina, Imam Hussein alayhi salam is preparing for a journey. He has been foretold that this journey will be a one-way trip. He will not come back to the city of Medina. So what is it that Imam Hussein alayhi salam is doing on this evening? We're told that he wants to visit three graves, three dear ones to him. Who are these dear ones? It is his brother and his beloved mother, Fatima al-Zahra, and his beloved grandfather, Rasulullah. Brothers and sisters, let's remember one thing that we learn from the life of the Ahlul Bayt, that whenever they had any troubles or calamities come in their lives, they knew there was a place they could go to, a safe haven, some place they could turn to pour out their hearts. They could go to Rasulullah, they could go to Fatima al-Zahra. Imam Hussein alayhi salam goes to the grave of his grandfather. He cries out to him, "Ya Rasulullah, O my beloved grandfather, it is me, Hussein. I am your grandson, the son of your daughter. Ya Rasulullah, look at what these people are doing to me. These people have abandoned me. فَاشْهَدْ أَنَّهُمْ خَذَلُونِي وَلَمْ يَحْفَظُونِي. Ya Rasulullah, this is my complaint to you until I meet you. One of the narrations says that Imam Hussein alayhi salam sees Rasulullah in his dream. What is Rasulullah crying out? He is saying, Habibi Ya Hussein, O my beloved Hussein, O my beloved Hussein, it's as if I can see you on the desert sand. The blood will cover you. You will be beheaded. And this will be the fault of this ummah. Imam Hussein alayhi salam is preparing to leave on that night. We are told that he would frequently recite the ayah of the Quran. Rabbi najjini min al-qawm al-zalimin. O my Lord, save me from these people who are unjust. We're told in a riwayah that the daughter of Imam Hussein alayhi salam said that never before has a family had to leave the city in a state of fear more than the fear we were facing on that night. After all, when you go on some type of journey, you know where you're going to go. You know that at one point you will return. But this is a journey they are going on. They don't know when they will return. They don't know what kind of hardships they will face. We have to say to her, Oh Sakina, be patient, for there will come a time when the same caravan will return to Medina, but it will not have the same people in it. Your uncle Abbas will not be there. Your brother Ali Akbar will not be there. Oh Sakina, your father Hussein will not be there. Instead, a cry will go out. Ya Ahla Yathriba La Muqama Laha. O people of Medina, this is no longer a place to stay in. Let your eyes pour out in tears. If you want to know what's happened to Hussein, let me tell you. Hussein was beheaded in Karbala, and his head is being paraded in the streets. Allah la'anatullahi ala al-qawm al-zalimeen. وسيعلم الذين ظلموا أي منقلب ينقلبون